WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Al Gray on trombone from a new album called Live at Rick's, the Al Gray Jimmy Forrest Quintet. Al Gray is my guest in the studio. He's a veteran of the big bands, having played in quite a few, including the bands of Jimmy Lunsford, Lionel Hampton, and Dizzy Gillespie. In 1957, he joined the Count Basie Band, where he played lead trombone for about 20 years, taking time out now and again to lead his own group. He's now fronting a band with his good friend tenor saxophonist Jimmy Forrest, also an alumni of the Basie Band. Their new album, Together, is Live at Rick's on the Aviva record label. And I should mention also that Al Gray is a resident of Philadelphia, though a good deal of his time is spent traveling around the country and other parts of the world. Al Gray, it's a great pleasure to have you here.
And it's a pleasure indeed to be here this afternoon, because living in Philadelphia and never appearing on Philadelphia stations makes me much happier about coming here today, really. We must always appear on radio wherever we appear. For instance, like last week, we were appearing in Denver, Colorado, at Clive's Bob's Lounge in Denver, Colorado, and we had to appear on radio there, which they have a 24-hour jazz station.
That's nice.
Yes, yeah. It really is.
You know, a lot of our listeners may have heard you last year during the Jazz Alive New Year's Eve broadcast in which you played. I think it was on the first half. Half of it was from
Sandy's in Boston,
yeah,
where we appeared.
Right, and then the other half went to Los Angeles or
right.
Someplace in the West Coast.
We appeared there with Jay McShann and Joe Jones and Carrie Smith. And then it went out to the West Coast with Freddie Hubbard and Archie Sheff and many others out there.
You spent a lot of time playing in various big bands, and also a lot of time leading your own band, small group and big band settings. Do you have any preferences for, you know, for what it's like to play with small groups and big bands, and how much space you have as a musician to really do your stuff?
Well, I have been very, very fortunate that I have worked with, well, I believe the only guy to live today that has worked with just about all the big bands. You know, I've started out with Benny Carter's big orchestra, and then Jimmy Lunsford, Lionel Hampton, and worked in the big bands in the studios, Dizzy Gillespie's orchestra, Lucky Millinder's big band. So from this, then worked in small bands like years ago, Arnett Cobb's small group, and I used to be the musical director for a small group, the Bull Moose Jackson. And then I was the musical director for another big band, for Lloyd Price's big band, in which I produced Misty. That was a hit in the Charleston form. And from Count Basie's orchestra, I just felt as though it was time to try it again for myself. And my partner, Jimmy Forrest, and I decided to get back into the business, because he had been out with a small group for quite a spell, because he had had the hit Night Train. You know, he's the writer of Night Train. And so today it's still a hot number, and we work all over the world. In fact, now today, the way jazz artists today, they have to split it up between Europe and the United States now.
When you're playing with Jimmy Forrest in your own band, do you have a lot more business responsibilities to take care of, since there isn't like with the Basie band, there's the Basie organization figuring out where the next tour is going to be and what clubs you're going to be booked in. When it's your own band, you've got to do a lot of that stuff yourself.
All of that. And that is the only thing about the small groups, because you don't look for a manager, because overhead is big enough as it is today for jazz. And promoters don't want to pay. And it's bad enough when an agent books you and he gets his 10% off the top. So we just more or less freelance. And since we have become pretty popular throughout the world, people call us. And so we don't actually have any agent. Agents call us and then we accept. For instance, like Disney World. But most jobs, in the summer months, we always take to the Newport Jazz Festival because we are sorted after for that occasion. And so we always go to Nice.
Is there anything you miss about not being with a big band?
Yes, the great big band sound in which Jimmy Forrest and I, we try to create that today, which you sort of like hear within our album here, which was a 5-star album in Cashbox for us, and we were very happy and proud about that, because people like Shirley Scott has been a giant for many, many years, but the people of Philadelphia never recognize it because she's a homie. Or Al Gray, he's a homie. Or like Bobby Durham, he's a homie. So they don't recognize their talent that is the greatest talent, really, in the world. Some of the greatest talent in the world comes right from the city of Philadelphia.
A lot of people feel that way about their home cities. Painters also frequently feel that they have to move somewhere else to get the kind of recognition that they need to support themselves and to sell their work. You've experienced that, though, that the people in Philadelphia are less receptive to you because you're a neighborhood asset, you're from here?
This is one thing. But also, too, you know, the artist himself can become very, as we say, lazy in the sense of producing or progressing in the field of music. And so it may be a stigma on himself that way, too. During the meantime, the people don't pay any attention to it, and they're not aware, perhaps, maybe, of that. And so they don't support you. So I, like myself, I don't appear in Philadelphia anywhere anymore. Nowhere. Only the scholarship funds of the Blue Monday Jazz Scholarship, and that is my heart given free.
Is that out of choice, you're not appearing anywhere?
That's of my choice, because, like, I can work, you know, like in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and they pay completely first-class prices and so on and so forth. You see, like now, by traveling around the country, I feel as though, again, a person that comes from the city, he should go somewhere to find out how he is being treated at his home. And maybe he would become aware that he would have to do better things for himself, not just to blame it on the audience or the people of, because like any time I play for the scholarship fund, I'm very well supported, and I'm very happy about that. So that's enough, just to see that someone else can learn to play music.
What are some of your favorite types of places to play in?
Well, I like Disney World is one, where people really actually come to listen to music, and it's the one and only spot like at Disney World.
Now, it's my bias, but I would expect in Disney World people come to see Mickey Mouse and to go on rides, not to hear jazz.
To take their children out in the afternoon and then to find a place to relax in the evening, you see? And that, during the meantime, it's good for the kids, too, because it lets them know that there is another music beside rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And they become aware then, too. We do seminars and clinics all throughout the United States, Jimmy Forrest and I do. We're residents, like at Grand Rapids School of Music. We have appeared for studies in Temple, Glassboro State, Trenton, and all over, UCLA. And when we come back from Europe, which will be the end of March, in next April, We'll be going to Wichita Jazz Festival and appearing in the Wichita State School. And so, consequently, jazz is here now very strong where it was cut out a few years ago. See, music was the first program cut out a few years ago.
I'd like to talk to you a little, Al Gray, about your experiences in the Basie band, because you were there for periods of
covering 20 years. I was like next in line after Freddie Grade. He had, it was there like 42 years, and, you know, then I come along, and I love Count Basie so much. I guess that was the reason I was there so long, because of personal love for a man, and he really appreciated my art playing, you see, and so consequently, I was his star, and he supported me strongly as his star, too. And, well, when I first went with Count Basie, I didn't have any solos at all because he had other stars, Benny Powell and Henry Coker. And due through this, I almost got fired because not having any solos. I just told him one night in England, I thought you had hired me to come to play a little bit of solos every now and then. And he said, there's no music for you, and you just have to wait till I do it. And so it was a period of time before music was written for me, which Thad Jones and Frank Foster and Sam Nistico and many other writers did come up with music for me. And then I looked up one day, and I had more solos than anyone. And I had to give some of the solos away to other guys in the band.
Did Basie ever use solos as a way of rewarding you or punishing you? You know, that if you weren't showing up for rehearsals, you wouldn't get to play solos. And if you were really doing a good job with the band, that you'd get more solos?
Well, if it's a must that, you know, if you were, you know, he only had a few guys running into the polls, you see, to keep the band. You must get into the polls to
like the downbeat polls.
Right. See, and if you have so many out of the band that's in the polls, that scores your band up there to be the big band of the year and so on and so forth. And I've been one of the award winners for a lot of years. But one of his things is, say, if you were to be late for a show, say if you were 2 or 3 minutes late and you're on stage, he would bring you right on right then with a solo because you didn't have a chance to warm up or anything. And so he would just laugh at you if you weren't ready, which I was one of those good guys. I could count on my one hand in a period of 22 years of service that I was late, and then it was emergencies that created that. This was a fun band. Everybody loved each other. And you didn't mind going to work. And Count Basie's band was a band that paid more than any of the big bands. And so consequently, it was security. But in the last few years, I got to thinking, I said, gee, Al, you have security here staying with Basie, and you know you got it made. Say, but suppose he retires tomorrow. Who knows you? Because it was Count Basie's orchestra, the most explosive force in jazz. It didn't say nothing about Al Gray's name. You might get your name mentioned on stage by Count Basie, but otherwise you don't see any public relation on that artist. It's like today. I doubt if you could name the personnel of Count Basie's band today, which I know I can't now because it has been changing in the last year so much. But I had a happy time, all the time there. In fact, my life has been very happy with the various different bands, from Lionel Hampton to Jimmy Lunceford to Benny Carter to Lucky Millinder.
The Basie Band has recorded a lot of albums. I remember in another radio station I used to work at before coming here, we had one album called Basie Plays Disney, I think it was, and it was just like theme songs from various Disney productions. I wondered about that record. I wondered whose decision that was to record an album of Disney stuff. Did you find yourselves having to record some pretty unusual material?
Well, it's always a challenge in a band like that. You see, we recorded a couple of albums of like the Beatles, and you see, and we created different feelings of like the Beatles. Like I had a solo on Yesterday's, which Bill Henderson sang, and I had fill-in part. And then to do my run while with Count Basie, I had several hits for him, like 007 and Watermelon Man.
Did you enjoy playing those non-jazz recordings?
Yes, I did. Why? I mean, when artists, when he has a chance to go to school and he is playing all types of music, I think he wants to, he or she would want to play sometimes something different within their lifetime. And like, I come from the church, so I used to play nothing but church music at first. See, but then after going to the Boston Conservatory of Music, that became another type of attitude. And then appearing in the Navy Band in Great Lakes, where all the greatest artists appeared, that gives you another outlook altogether. And then by traveling all the time to all of these various countries, like now I think, you know, like a few years ago, I traveled with Norman Grant to the Jazz Philharmonic, where we appeared over in like Beirut and Baalbek, and where they're having all the crisis now. Like we stayed at the St. George, which was the first one blowed up, which was so gorgeous, go swimming and everything, you see. So I'm aware of the happenings today from traveling so much in Europe today.
Where do you think you got most of your musical education from when you were younger, say, from being on the road with bands, from playing on stage, from really doing it?
Well, from playing all of my life. I used to get spankings from my father for messing with his horn. My father was a musician, and he'd go out, and I just couldn't keep my hands off his horn. And it didn't mean anything, those spankings, then, till he got me a horn, and it rubbed off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I come from a musical family. My sister played trumpet. I have a brother played clarinet and saxophone. And my kids that I have today, they play. One just finished up in Berklee School of Music, and he's on the road right at the present time with Ain't Misbehavin' Show.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and he plays all the trombone parts. In fact, he appeared on the Salute to Count Basie last New Year's on the station.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you think you have to keep your body in shape to play a horn like an athlete does?
Definitely, because you have to have stamina, especially drummers, because of the leg and everything, because if you play a fast tune and if he's not in shape, it'll go just like a clock. He could tick, tick right on down until it just like stops. And so what you do is, especially when you work in clubs that have a lot of smoke and everything like that, you first try to see that you get protected with that, with the exhaust and all like that. And then you get up, you do knee bends and all like that, like any other person would for exercise.
What do you do to keep your chops in shape?
Well, like I breathe just the opposite, breathing or playing, so I... My development from the Boston Conservatory of Music was from the stomach, the diaphragm, and so therefore I control the air from the lips. And so then I keep all the pressure off of my lips so that I feel as though I will be able to play for another 50 years. Like, I have no problem of armature or playing, because many people come to me today asking the same question, but I think it's because I have been trained to control the air and let the air come out in a stream of air straight to the mouthpiece and take the pressure off of the lips. Because like some of the great artists like Dizzy Gillespie, he didn't have chance to learn right, so he flows from the side. And today this is like a crisis.
Wait, because it's hard. It's hard for him to do that now.
Yes, because of the leaders here. See, it makes more of a strain.
Yeah.
where when you're in the center of the mouth, this is to all musicians. He's got it correct then.
We're almost out of time this afternoon. The time's gone really quickly. I just want to ask you about your future tours. It sounds like you're going to be continuing going around the country
and
the world.
Yes, we're very fortunate. Me and Jimmy Forrest, we will continue from Paris the end of February, going to Utrecht, Holland, Amsterdam, and Groningen in Holland. Then we come back to the United States, which go out to Wichita, Kansas, and then we start the Newport Jazz Festival, which they're going to have a big band, and I'm really waiting for this very much because I haven't played in a big band since I left Count Basie, and they're going to have the alumni Count Basie band.
Oh, nice.
June the 27th at the Newport Jazz Festival, and I have been invited.
Oh, great.
And Jimmy Forrest, too. And that's going to be a thrill to be back with all of the, you know, players back 10, 15 years, like Frank Foster, Thad Jones, Snooky Young, those guys, you see. It's going to be really great.
Well, Al Gray, I wish you the best. It's really been a great pleasure to have you here. I wish we had more time to talk. So maybe some other time you can come back.
Yes, I hope so. When I come back home, maybe when we have another one of the scholarship funds, I would love to speak about it very much.
Good. Okay. Should we look forward to another album in the near future?
Oh, yes. We have one coming out within the next 2 months, coming from Europe, from Black and Blue Label, which we already have four out from that since we left Count Basie anyway, with Tommy Flanagan. We have one, and we have one with Arnett Cobb. I have one. J.C. Hurd, Hank Jones. I have four other albums, but they're European, you see. Europe is bringing the music to America, see.
Yes, it's very unusual.
When we should be sending the music to there, you see. And this is where we're still trying to catch up.
Well, let's listen to a selection from one of your new records that's available in America on the Aviva record label. Before we hear it, I want to thank you, Al Gray, for coming to Fresh Air this afternoon and wish you good luck on all your future journeys. We're going to hear a selection now from the Al Gray Jimmy Forrest Quintet album, Live at Rick's. And this is a collaboration between Al Gray and Jimmy Forrest. It's called Truly Wonderful. And I should mention that another Philadelphia musician is featured with them at the piano, Shirley Scott. Al Gray, thanks again.
And I thank you very much, Terry. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Trombonist Al Gray with tenor player Jimmy Forrest from their new album Live at Rick's, a piece called Truly Wonderful.